You know, we keep talking about physical evidence, real evidence, so we could really decide, you know, are we being visited? Are there extraterrestrials? Dr. Roger Lehr, author of Aliens and the Scalpel, is said to be one of the world's most important leaders in physical evidence research involving the field of ufology. Dr. Roger Lehr will be Art Bell's guest for an entire program this Saturday night, so make sure you are part of that program. So we're going to talk with him for just a few moments here. Roger, how are you?
Okay, George, how are you? I've got my roadmap here of the United States, taking a look at it.
And what does it show you, Roger?
I'm trying to follow your exploits all over the country with tremendous sales of your new book.
Well, let's talk about the tremendous work of you, Mr. Lehr. First of all, how you feeling? You bounce back like a rubber ball.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good today, George, and hope to continue that way for another day or two.
Well, stay with us, Roger, because you're the only one doing what needs to be done here in the field of ufology. As a matter of fact, I think you're the only one, aren't you?
Well, you know, that's what people tell me. I've been to 42 countries in the last 7 years, and I don't know anybody else yet that's doing the same. So, but there could be somebody out there I haven't heard of.
You know, I'm still amazed when Tom and I went and witnessed you and your surgeon removing that object from that woman's cheek and how difficult it was to take out this small thing. It kept moving and bouncing and escaping. And every time, you know, the tweezers or whatever you guys use, the forceps to pull that thing out, it moved around. It's almost like it had its own device on it with eyes.
Yeah, it's very strange, certainly watching it on the scope that we use with the C-arm, and the one that, unfortunately, you couldn't be at this past 23rd of last month, similar, too. We had a hard time getting a hold of it, and you could witness the same things, which we have on video. So we now have, you know, some that are very similar to each other. I'm just starting to get the data back on the new one.
Understand, of course, that you have really jumped in with the movie you're working on. And also you continue to get new data from people about these implants. Have you made a conclusion yet, Roger, just based on your own research, what these things are?
Well, they're some kind of manufactured devices, obviously manufactured by, the best I can explain, by an intelligence that's not earthly. And as far as purpose is concerned, you know, I pretty well try and stay in the scientific genre. So, I mean, you can theorize. And they look like, of course, devices which are obtaining information. Now, this last one we did, get a radio frequency, which was so specific. It was in the third toe, and I pointed the antenna for the radio frequency counter to two adjoining toes. We got nothing. But on the one toe where the object was, we got a specific frequency. Now, I don't have it in front of me, so I can't tell you what it is.
You'll have it by Saturday.
I'll have it with Saturday night with Art. But, I mean, that's pretty specific. So some information is coming out of it. And I think that, you know, if you look at the sum of the total abduction phenomena worldwide, most of us that have looked at it, Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and myself and the late Dr. John Mack, we've come to the conclusion that the least you can say is there's something genetic going on. And, you know, Dr. Jacobs thinks that there's a hybrid program going on, which we certainly can't disagree with. But
no.
It could be even more extensive. Human race may be being genetically remanipulated.
You were recently at Area 51. What were you doing up there?
Yes, George, I was there for Red Flag Days. And Red Flag Days is the name that Area 51 gives to their war games.
Uh-huh.
And we spent three days there, Jordan Maxwell, myself, and a couple of other individuals. And we saw some really interesting stuff besides the ordinary stuff. But when you feel them drop the bombs and the ground shakes under your feet and the noise, we don't know where they're dropped on, whether it's on the Nellis Range or someplace else, but we were probably miles away from where they were dropping bombs, but you could really feel it. And then at nighttime, you know, you see all the F-16 activities going on, and they fly different sorties, and they drop targets and flares. Well, I want to tell you, one night we had already picked out a little deserted road going off the extraterrestrial highway, and we were heading for that road. And you know, here's the way good UFO investigators operate. This is a good example. In my lap was a video camera. Around my neck was a pair of binoculars. So we're driving along, you know, with made up our mind we're going to head off on this little road. This stuff is going on. The sky is totally clear. You could see all the sorties being flown by the guys and so on. And up ahead, Jeff, who was driving the car, says, "Oh, look, there's a light just popped up over that hill." I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, wow, I wonder what that is." And we drive a little bit further. "Oh, look, there's two lights now. Oh, gee, now there's three. And then there's four. Jeez. And then there's five. And then there's six. And, oh, my, they seem to be going around in a circle." Well, you know, retrospective thought, we should have pulled off the road immediately, shut off the car lights, fired up the camera, and taken the video of this thing.
Are you saying you didn't take any video at all?
No, it was in my lap. You know, didn't even get it, because we had made up our mind, you know, we're going to go on this road, we're going to get a better look.
Roger.
Yeah, that's the way. Yeah. So it was a saucer, you know. And you could see the lights going around in a counterclockwise fashion. And I think when it got up far enough, we were the only car, you know, on this deserted road. I think when it saw us, it just, you know, it went back down, and that was the end of that. But the following night, again, you know, we weren't prepared. We just walked out. We were staying there at the little alien, and we just walked out to look at the sky and we're trying to decide which direction we're going to go to see if maybe we could see something. So again, all this activity was going, and we saw what we thought were three F-16s, two ahead and one trailing, and then there was another one on the left side. And all of a sudden, I think it was Jordan that said, "Oh, look at that. Where the two F-16s are in front, it just blocked out that star." And
that's,
I said,
"Amazing.
Wait a minute." So I grabbed the binoculars and we looked. And this thing was a triangle. You know, I don't know how big the one Art saw was, but
that's a pretty good size.
This thing was huge. It blocked out a huge portion of the sky. And the strobing that we thought, you know, were the F-16s was a strobing light, which is in each corner of the triangle. And then to the left rear of it was an F-16 that was trailing it. But there you go. And again, staying there were three Belgian pilots, and evidently we have an exchange program going on between Belgium and the U.S.
Yes.
These guys were going to fly the following week, so when they're off base, they can stay wherever they want. So they were staying also at the little alien. And on the last day, we were getting ready to leave. I was alone with one of them in the restaurant, and they were telling him, you know, what we saw, and he just smiled at me. And he says, "Well, let me tell you, everything you hear about Area 51 is true."
I love it. Hey, I look forward to hearing you Saturday with Art.
Well, listen, I hope you have time to listen, because it's going to be a bang-up show. We're going to really cover some specifics. You know, I don't mind naming laboratories. I don't like to put out conjecture and you know, idle thoughts. I try and deal in clear, precise facts. And if there's a question to be asked, I answer it straightforward.
You sure do. Okay, Roger, you take care until Saturday.
Okay, George, thanks for having me on.
That's Dr. Roger Lear. We're going to have open lines now for the next couple hours. the special UFO extravaganza night, west of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, open line time. Let's go right to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, George.
Hi.
I wanted to tell you about an experience I had. Now, this has nothing to do with UFOs, but back in June, I had a friend who was, my name's Amy from Pennsylvania, by the way.
Okay, Amy, sure.
So back in June, I had a friend who was going through a very bitter divorce, and she had nowhere to go, so I let her live here with my husband and I, and I'm getting shaken up as I tell this story.
Why?
And it's a big home, so I figured, well, what the heck, well, here she's a Wiccan. And not that I have anything against that, but she had asked me if she could practice her religion here. So funny thing, I'm a Roman Catholic, so I told her, well, go ahead. So here, probably like a month later, because she lived here only a month. And I'll tell you why. I heard this banging and screaming upstairs. So we went up the steps, and George, she was being tossed around, and I still get choked up when I talk about it. Can you turn this down, Dan? Can you turn this down? So I went up the steps. I heard this banging around, screaming, and George, she was being tossed around the room like a rag doll.
Oh, my.
I've never in my life seen anything like this, and I'm getting choked up.
Well, and let me tell you, Amy, first of all, as you know, someone who practices, you know, the Wiccan faith, they're not bad people at all. You know, I thought, wrongfully so, that they were, you know, black mass witches. It's not true. They believe in God. They believe that God is, you know, a male-female gender. But it's very strange that something would happen to this person.
Well, you know what she
almost
did?
Like they were possessed. What happened?
She, all I could say is I got my rosaries out to St. Michael. She had this book called Familiar Spirits. And what she had told me is that she summoned one of these things to protect her, and it ended up turning on her.
Oh, my gosh. Was she screaming?
Oh, I'll tell you what, she was about 3 to 4 feet up in the air. And when I got about halfway to the rosary, she just dropped. So I told her, why would you do something like this? It's not the religion, it's bad. It's what people do, this familiar spirits thing. And I'll tell you what, I read this book. I got to about the 50th page, and I put it in the garbage. So I threw her out a day
after.
Did.
I
told her just to get out of here.
You couldn't handle it. And I mean, did she leave in a friendly way or was it tense?
It was pretty bad. I told her, you know, why would you do something like this? Bring a book like this into our home when you don't know what you're doing. You know, to me, she wasn't practicing this very long. To me, she was trying to be an Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
In less than a year, and that's. That's not too bright.
No, it isn't. So she's gone. Good riddance, I guess. And everything is now calm in the house?
Everything's great in the house.
Okay. Well, thanks for the story. Appreciate you being part of Coast to Coast. First-time caller line. Hello there.
Hello.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, how you doing? About five years ago in the summer, maybe 2001, me and a couple of friends, we were at a hotel on the beach. And this was the discussion. I mean, no lie. We were looking at the ocean water where it meets the sky.
All right.
And it was so dark, we were like, it looks kind of evil, don't you think? And my buddy says, in the Bible, creatures will come out of the ocean. No later, as soon as he said that, we look over probably where the sand meets the water. And we saw these creatures. And, I mean, not to be funny, everybody laughs, but they look like little penguins. And we were like, okay.
How do you know they weren't?
Well, I live in Florida. I mean, they could have been. But I said, they jumped around over there. They're doing, like, circles and all, like, just weird movements. Next thing you know, these things, they moved up. They crawled up the stairs, like, you know how at the ocean, you can, they have like a, it's like a stair you can go up to where the hotel is?
Yeah.
Well, I was focused on the little ones, and out of nowhere, I see these four big ones.
How many were out there?
I say about the little ones, there was approximately 10 or 15. And when they were on the beach, I saw two red flashes. And from what my friend described to me is when he saw the flash, he could look at me and still see the flash on my face. Almost like it was like slow motion or, I mean.
Strange. Okay, and these things, do they waddle like penguins?
They waddled and, you know, they kind of like moved like Matrix. Like in the Matrix, how they move kind of slow, but.
Yeah.
Like,
And your buddy saw this too or just you?
My buddy saw this, and my friend, whose hotel we were at, he says he didn't see a thing. But, I mean, me and my friend definitely saw it. It was a life-changing experience.
How bizarre. And what did they do after they climbed the steps?
Well, okay, once they went up to the steps, that's when I saw the four big ones. They kind of had like a coat, like kind of like a, how do I describe it? I mean, some kind of like...
Like a trench coat?
I'm like not a trench coat, but you know how they have the big collars?
Yeah, like the old days.
Right, and there were like different colors, red, blue. I think there was a yellow one. And looking at the faces, it kind of looked Egyptian-like. You know how they have the pharaoh faces, like the big, like the bird-looking faces?
Okay, so they had the reptilian or the bird-looking face.
Right, something like, they were approximately maybe, I want to say 100 feet maybe from where we were standing. And next thing you know, I see two humans. They walk up on bikes next to the hotel that we're at on the other side of the fence. They walk up and talk to these things.
They talk to them?
They talk to them. And then probably a couple seconds, and they walk back on the other side of the fence.
You know what's going to happen. You're going to be watching television one day and see some bizarre penguin commercial.
Oh, I've been seeing a lot of them, and I'm just like... But I can't believe there were penguins. I mean, they came out of the ocean. I saw the two little ships or boats or whatever they came in on.
They came in on boats?
Some, I want to say they were kayaks, but they weren't. They were kind of like red, glowing-looking things on the ocean.
And where did they end up going once they climbed the steps?
Well, the thing is, they met up with the big ones, and the human people talked to them. The same two humans came into our patio where our pool area is, at our hotel, and they stood in front of us. There was two of them, and literally just turned around and stared at us.
Did they look normal?
And they looked like regular humans. They turned around and stared at us, and we seen a white flash. But
and the penguin people, what happened to them?
They were still over there.
How bizarre. Open lines all night long. On Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. I'm George Norrie. Okay, we're going to have open lines for you for the rest of tonight. You've got those numbers. Back in a moment. We're working on a book tour in the future as well to get us to Philadelphia, Boston, and New York, hopefully, in the next couple of months. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi there.
Yes, sir. Where are you calling from?
My name is Buddy from Port Gamble, Washington.
Hello, Buddy.
I want to tell you about a little thing that happened to me many years ago. It was in the South China Sea. It was June the 26th, 1964, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
My gosh, buddy, you remember it exactly. It's got to be something.
Yes, I was stationed on a carrier at tide. And we got a report to the bridge. I was supposed to make the watch at the time. We got a report to the bridge from combat that there was an object moving at a high rate of speed heading toward us. And the captain asked, how long will it be before it'll be in our area? He says, well, the speed it's doing, it'll be about 3 minutes. Oops, it's already here. It came up our starboard bow, and it hovered a little bit right off the starboard side of the bow, and the thing looked like it was humongous. It looked like it was about 70 feet in circumference, and I called it a saucer with a cup turned upside down on it. And the captain got all shook up, so he fired duty cat, which was four Phantom IV jets. And it took up, it left, and they started chasing it. And one jet got within range to fire a sidewinder at it, and it shot straight up in the air, and the pilot said it estimated to be doing about 12,000 miles an hour. Jeez. Went completely out of sight. This was one sighting that was never reported, but it is written in the logbook of that carrier. And it is documented. It took a whole page to log it in.
Now, when you say this thing came up on you, did it come up? Was it coming out of the air, or was it under in the water?
It was in the air. It was just hovering alongside of us.
Ah, okay. What do you think it was?
Well, I never believed in flying saucers until I seen this, and it made a true believer out of me.
There is no way it could have been man-made, is there?
No. There was 20 people on that bridge that seen it. And the captain made a report to the admiral, and the admiral says, well, make a report to Washington, D.C. on this. Well, the captain told the admiral, well, if you want it reported, sir, you report it, because I'm not crazy. And the admiral came up on a bridge, and the captain asked everybody on the bridge, did you see anything out there? We all said no, because we're not insane.
Oh, my God. So basically the story never went anywhere because nobody said anything.
It was never reported.
To this day, do you and your friends, do you keep in contact with anybody? Do you talk about this?
I haven't talked to anybody about that thing in about 10 years now.
You're a believer, aren't you, now?
I am a believer now.
All right. Hey, thanks for that.
And
buddy.
I've been listening to your program since 1991.
That is a great, great story. And, of course, it was Art's program. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. This is Mike in North Royalton, Ohio.
Yeah, Mike. Thank you.
How are you?
Good.
Great show tonight. I wanted to point out, and maybe somebody else remembers, I remember when I was very, very young reading the article about Betty and Barney Hill. I think it was Look Magazine.
Look Magazine did it. Absolutely.
Okay. And in that, it was very detailed. And Betty said that they took her and they inserted a needle into her belly button. And after the article, they refuted it. You know, they had their medical experts saying that there's no reason that a medical person would ever insert a needle into a woman's belly button. And this was when? I'm not sure.
Or 60s, really early 60s, yeah.
Yeah, well, 20, 30, or 40 years later now, the medical professionals do amniocentesis all the time. They insert needles into women's belly button. And
that's right.
You know, I mean, at the time, the doctor who wrote that was probably smoking a cigarette. You know, so we've learned something since then. I wonder if anyone else remembers that fact.
Well, I got to tell you, you are the only person who has ever called this program who mentioned that Look Magazine article, because that article was one of the reasons why, at a very young age, I wanted to go into broadcasting and cover these kinds of stories.
It intrigued me. I brought it to my mom, and she said, oh, that's just fiction. I said, no, it's not, Mom. Look at this.
Yeah, these are real people they're talking about.
These are real people. They're saying where they lived and everything else, you know. Yeah, it was for real. I don't know if you have a minute.
Yeah, I've got some time.
I wanted to relate the most fantastic thing that ever happened to me.
What happened to you?
When I was 19, I was raised Roman Catholic, but at the time, I was in college, and I was kind of like rebelling against the world, and I said that I was an atheist. I was an existentialist, and I pretty much tried to strengthen my belief in existentialism with science and everything.
Yeah.
And one night, then I stopped praying and stopped going to church. And one night I heard a voice as I was sort of like, my sister had an argument about why Christ was real and that, you know, all these 2,000 years of thinkers couldn't be wrong. And I started formulating thoughts in my head about, you know, why I was right. And I heard a voice say, "Are you sure?" And then I go, "God help me," because I heard a voice. And that was the first time I prayed in years. Then there was a white light, brighter than any light I've ever seen in my life. And I was awake and standing up in my room. And I thought, oh, no, they dropped the bomb. And you know, a whole lot of thoughts were going through my head real fast.
Sure.
I was terrified. And I was facing away from Cleveland, and I thought, no, the light would be in Cleveland if they dropped the bomb. And then I thought, no, the Ravenna Arsenal in Ohio, there's a military arsenal. They'd bomb that. And then I thought, I got to get down before the next wave of radiation hits me.
19 years old, you're thinking about all this.
Yeah, and I was terrified, and I laid down and put my hand on across my eyes, and I could see my bones. This light was so bright, I could see my bones. Well, it was like an X-ray. And then I felt this presence of something there, and I very sheepishly peeked, and I thought,
yeah,
I'm going to go blind, but I'm going to peek anyway. It'll be the last thing I see. And I see this being of light with eyes in it. And
looking down on you?
Yeah, coming towards me. And I was terrified. And he said, "Don't be afraid." And he looked me in the eye like no one ever looked me in the eye before, and I wasn't afraid all of a sudden. And I thought for a second it was my dad, but it wasn't my dad.
Had your dad passed on?
No, my dad's alive. But he just looked really familiar. And he had human brown eyes. And even though he was glowing, he had a long, glowing, white robe. I could see human features on his face.
Did he calm you down?
Oh, yeah, he calmed me down. When he said the words, "Do not be afraid," he calmed me down immediately. Then I was in this place, and it reminded me of the first time I got in trouble. You could say the first time I was conscious of sinning, like when I was 8 years old, and I got in trouble at my grandpa's house. It felt like I was there. The sin was me and my cousin went behind the garage and were playing with the car parts that grandpa threw out there, and we weren't allowed to go back there, and we got caught and got yelled at. Well, I was now standing there looking at this beautiful, loving being and felt horrible and unworthy of even being there.
Because of that episode?
No, all the sins of my life I was standing in. But
okay.
Yeah, that episode was the first one.
I see.
And I looked down and I'm in this muddy muck up to my knees. And I reached my hand up for him because I knew he could pull me out of it. And it was kind of like I knew that he could forgive my sins kind of thing. If I just reached and he grabbed my hand and I said, "Pull me out, please." And he said, "What about him?" And I looked, and in his other hand, he had my cousin, you know, who was the one who had the ideas, kind of like the Adam and Eve story. He was I was mad at him for me ever sinning, and from there on, I was a sinful person the rest of my life, you know? So I was mad at him, but it was necessary for me to forgive him. I said, pull him out. What about him? I said, pull him out. And when I said that, we were both standing there on solid ground.
And you changed your belief system after that, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I immediately, the next day, looked for a Bible and found a Bible and opened it to the Apocalypse, and it was a story about John the Revelator saying a vision he had of Jesus, and the first words he said to him was, "Do not be afraid."
Do not be afraid, which is exactly what happened to you. Thank you. That's a wonderful story. Wildcard line, let's go to you while we still have some time this hour. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to the program. Where are you calling from?
My name is Yvonne, and I'm calling from Belmont, California, the Bay Area.
Yeah, absolutely. What's on your mind, Yvonne?
Well, I'm a new listener. I've been listening to your station since, I think, a Memorial weekend. I was driving up to my cousin's up in Ukiah, turned on the radio, and I was hearing ghost stories. And so I've been fascinated with ghost stories and aliens and just everything beyond this world.
Well, you keep listening because you're going to get all kinds of things with this program.
I know, and I love it. I love it. My brothers both were sort of the same idea where they were in bed. This light woke them up, and it was like paralyzed. They felt paralyzed, but they felt this light coming into the room, but they couldn't move or scream. And so they said they started praying. And when they started praying, the light went away. So they weren't sure if it was, you know, an alien, but both my brothers experienced this in the same room. And then my father, who was in the Air Force, experienced a sphere in Merced, California, and he was in the Air Force, and he is a believer. I'm from Madera originally, and I saw a spacecraft out in the country. So I believe that the aliens, you know, that God created them as well as us.
Seems like they also picked out your family for some reason.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. And dreams that I've had, too, where I've said I want to go with them. And then when they came for me, I was like, no, I don't want to go by myself. I want my mom to go and my sisters and everybody, right? But anyway, the thing I wanted to mention was, I don't know if you've ever heard of Ruth Montgomery.
Oh, sure. She's very good.
Yeah. Well, I read all her books. But I remember reading one book that told about aliens and how there's like seven tribes of aliens, and there's three that are good and four that are bad. And the only thing that's keeping the bad ones away is the sun.
They can't handle the sun?
They can't handle the sun.
Huh.
Yeah. So I don't know if you ever read that.
Well, I don't recall reading that. I've read a lot of Ruth Montgomery's works. I believe when she talks about seven tribes, I think there's way more than that out there in terms of races, extraterrestrial races. And I do think they're good and bad. I think this universe has got them all.
I agree. And do you think that God has not invented, but has created everything in this universe?
That's a good question. That's a tough question. I think there's a divine creator. There's intelligence behind it. And then I think somehow a lot of it forms on its own once it's steered or pushed in a certain direction. Okay, appreciate you being on the program. We got you clicked there right at the end. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, sir.
This is Tim calling from Garfield, Arkansas. My friends like to call me Storm Drain. And
Storm Drain?
Yes.
You got to tell us why.
Well, it doesn't relate to the story, but I'm kind of like a garage physicist, and I build machines, and they propagate resonant waves into the ionosphere.
Okay.
And And they have influence on weather patterns. Okay, and that's like a whole nother story. If you wanted to go into it, we could, but I wanted to relate to the UFO story.
All right, but that's why they call you Storm Drain?
Well, absolutely. But my friends, they've seen my machines, and I do displays for my friends, and there's all kinds of phenomenon that go on with it.
Fascinating nickname, but tell me your UFO story.
Okay, since I've moved here to Arkansas, I've seen quite a few. One in particular, and we were sitting outside, and I yelled over to my buddy, and I'm like, we're like, look up there. And we saw this light that was traveling in a straight line up in the sky. And it was, you know, fairly bright. And as it was traveling across the sky, it got really bright. And then next thing we know, it was the brightest object in the sky. And it was continuing in a straight line. And as we watched it, it was moving very fast because, I mean, in a couple of seconds, it cleared a lot of sky. And then just as it was dim and faded up to bright, it faded down to dim again, and then all of a sudden it was gone. And this was all in a straight line. It didn't go up or down, and that was very unusual. And another time back home in California, out in Lakewood, I happened to look up in the sky, and I noticed these five ominous glowing lights up in the sky. And my first thought was that it was perhaps like a stealth fighter, like the underside of a stealth fighter.
Right.
And I've read that the military does studies with special kinds of lights for battlefield type situations.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And I thought it was some type of an experimental light because these lights were very ominous and glowing, kind of some type of a neon or a bioluminosity type glowing. And as it flew over me, I was looking at it, and instead of being a single wing, I noticed that each light was kind of moving independently, floating like up and down. And I had to do a double take. And
was this a triangle?
Yes, it was in a triangle. And, you know, five crafts, you know, one in the center, two, you know, the next down, and just like a triangle. And I was like, look at that, you know. And as it flew over me, I couldn't hear a sound. There was no noise.
See, you have just described the textbook triangular-shaped object that so many people are seeing. I've been told we made them. It's man-made. I don't know if it's reverse-engineered from some other place, but I'm told they're ours, and I bet they're near a military base near you. We'll be back with another hour to go of Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.